that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Colin Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find a flick that monster boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Boogaloo! Welcome back, my friends. Oh, this is Season 5, Astronuts of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu. Happy to be with you, and also happy to be joined by my good friends. And we're going to start with Jack Hall. I don't know what you're calling yourself this time, Jack Hall.
See, I was Black Jack Hall. Jumping Jack Hall. Let's say the new Mac Jack Hall.
The new Mac Jack Hall. Whoa, that's a mouthful is what that is. All right, Jim Cotta.
I am thrilled to be here as we launch a new season.
That's right, out in space. And finally, we have Nick Boxer.
Greetings and salutations. I'm glad to be last but not least.
That's right, not least today.
You're least.
And certainly not least is the movie that we are starting this season out on. Ah, this wonderful space opera called Star Crash. I like this movie a lot, and I know that Nick is going to like telling us about it.
Well, yeah, I'm going to love telling you about this one because it is quite a simple plot. It seems to be a war about space chairs. Everybody in this movie gets a chair except the bad guy. And they got some wonderful chairs. The Space King has this magnificent throne. Our intrepid crew have these wonderful silver goblets of chairs. I think the bad guy just wants to sit down. Actually, none of the villains in this film ever sit. It is amazing. Seriously though, this movie, what the hell is this movie about? I have no idea.
I watched it yesterday. I couldn't tell you.
Have you seen Star Wars?
the galaxy is split in two between two ruling factions. You have the bad guys and the good guys. The bad guys are all dressed in black. The good guys are all dressed in white. And one of the good guys' ships gets shot down and they lose their space prince or whatever. And it's shot down by some mysterious weapon that we have yet to figure out. We spend the entire movie sort of figuring out, called the Red Monsters. I don't get it. So the Space King's best plan is to recruit a space smuggler named, I think she's Sally Star or Sarah Star.
Stella.
Or
something. Stella Star.
Stella Star.
Stella Star.
To go find the space prince and destroy the enemy planet. That is her actual mission, to both save the prince and destroy this mysterious evil planet. And why they pick her, I have no idea.
Well, because she's a great pilot and
wears her a bikini very well, and maybe she has one of the coolest chairs. I have no idea.
She was adjacent to one of the ships that in the big attack at the beginning of the film. So,
okay.
I mean, basically, it's like a gender swap Star Wars. You know, if Luke was a Bond girl in a bikini for the whole film, which in hindsight.
Yeah. No doubt about it.
Did anyone else notice? Everybody else gets a gun, but she never gets to like carry a gun.
How can she?
Well,
she has one on the Amazon planet, doesn't she?
She finds one on the Amazon planet, doesn't get to fire it, and it's more of a space spear. I don't know if the Amazons had guns.
Well, no, they did.
Here's the thing about this movie is she starts off presented as the hero, and by the end, she's just standing by the Emperor of the Galaxy doing nothing. It's like her role and importance is reduced as this film goes on greatly.
Well, everybody's importance is reduced greatly. Well, by the end, it's really just up to the Space King.
Yeah, except for Christopher Plummer. His role doesn't change, but like he's still barely in the movie, but he is super important to the end.
Super important to the end, yeah. She's just standing there beside him doing nothing, literally at the end, except for wearing her leather bikini still.
Well, I thought...
What is the royalty structure? Because he's the emperor.
Yes, he's the emperor.
But, and we didn't name drop him yet. David Hasselhoff is the missing prince. So it's an emperor and a prince, okay. Which I don't actually... like, is that how that works? Like, are there still princes when there's an emperor?
I
really think you put more thought into this movie than the makers did on that one.
That is what we do here on Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. That's our zone. That's our sweet spot.
Yes, overthinking.
Thinking about this much more than the filmmakers. That could be our tagline.
Yeah.
Okay. You guys need to think about this for 10 seconds. So we will put in way more time.
Oh, man.
Well, because I totally thought that the movie was over once they defeated the defeated the planet and the red monsters.
Her importance as a character is over the second the robot says to her, "Time for a little robot chauvinism. I'll go down there," and she just stands there. Like, that's all right. That's it.
So you have the movie ending before the space swords come out.
It's all fun and games
because that's where the movie starts for me when we now have lightsabers.
Well, no, and it's not so much that it doesn't kind of start there. It's just that I felt like I had thought that the movie was over, and then I went and looked and I'm like, no way, there's still like 25 minutes left of this movie. It seems like there shouldn't be, but there is.
So this movie came out in 1978. It's definitely, let's be polite and let's be generous and say it borrows heavily from Star Wars.
What? I mean, only from the first shot on. Literally. Just from the first shot.
Opening credits to the end.
Spaceship with a shot from underneath, the exact shot.
But they end up on a snow planet for a sizable chunk of the movie, which means, and because this came out in 1978, it means that Empire Strikes Back stole that from this film. So it all evens out.
And they had a character in this film saved by another character, not by being stuffed into an animal, but because they held hands and he used the energy to put her into.
That's awesome. So there is they get stranded on the winter planet, and the girl who is wearing like a shirt for a change.
She does occasionally.
Yeah.
She does occasionally put on clothes. I'll tell you why. Here's this season's, we're calling it psychotherapy. The sci facts.
Nice.
psychotherapy. It's because the distributors of the film wanted her in the second half to wear some more clothes because they were worried they couldn't have it broadcast on television if they kept on showing her in a bikini the whole film.
That's a shame. That's a damn shame. That's what that is.
Just
there you go.
Politics. Just damn politics.
Politics.
Yeah.
I know. Otherwise, she would have been on that frozen planet in a leather bikini. Yes.
Wow. So they get caught at the beginning. She's wearing like a regular space outfit, and then they get caught. She gets put on a prison planet. That's where she gets the leather bikini. Like, they gave her better clothes. They gave her a change of costume between when they arrested her and when she gets sentenced, actually. My wife, Lacey, watched part of this film with me, and she said, why is she wearing the super sexy prison outfit? I'm like, that's just the regular outfit. I mean, none of the rest of the people in the prison are wearing it, but...
they just get to wear whatever they want. It's not like...
I never ask, why is somebody wearing a sexy
outfit? I had more of a problem with the escape plan, which seems to be her asking, we should try to escape, and then it immediately happens.
Yeah, you know, we could do this.
She's been on the prison planet for like an hour, and then comes up with a cunning escape plan that actually involves her sacrificing the entire rest of the prison population. She's like, we just need to get one of the weapons. So she steals a gun, and a giant gunfight breaks out. And the second she gets a hold of a weapon, she just leaves.
Yeah. She just walks away. She walks away, and you think that'll be a plot point that she escaped from prison. And then they just show up and go, hey, you didn't have to escape. We were going to let you out. We have need for you as a pilot, so we were just going to let you out. So her escaping didn't – like, you could take that right out of the film. No problem. It had nothing to do with anything.
It's just like that scene in Star Wars where Leia escapes from the prison, and then they're like, oh, we were going to let you out anyway.
Yeah.
let's talk about Acton, the male lead of this until he gets totally replaced by
the Deus Ex Machina that has the powers to suit the given situation at the time.
Until he doesn't. Because he doesn't want to mess with his destiny. You could save yourself, but it's my destiny to die here. You could save yourself, but it's my destiny, and you can't fight your destiny. What?
If anyone could explain what Acton's powers are, I would love it, because they seem kind of
unshuffled. I thought his space sword was one of his powers until David Hasselhoff grabbed it.
That's a lightsaber. If I've ever seen a lightsaber, that's a lightsaber. Not space sword. Space sword makes it sound like it's a sword in space. This thing is a lightsaber. It's not apparently just one though, because it has different colors depending on the scene.
Yeah, it does.
So it's more of a mood lightsaber.
Yeah.
So we know he can see the future.
Yeah, he can see the future. So
we know he has heat powers of some kind because he's able to warm the.
And he's like, he's definitely like a Christmas tree because he can make lights with his hands.
Yeah, because remember he's explaining the different planets by using the different lights that don't have the shape of planets.
Yeah, that are just random light effects.
Oh, and he's a human calculator because he can do we have a 60% of chance of death.
That's true.
40,
Yeah, at that point, I actually thought that he was...
So he could channel C-3PO.
Well, I thought he was an android at that point.
Yeah, I did too.
I thought we were in aliens.
Assuming he was a...
Wait, again, C-3PO doesn't do that till Empire Strikes Back, which means, again, Empire is stealing from this film.
Wow, we always knew
that. Let's be entirely clear how much that Star Wars stole from Star Crash. And give credit where it's due. So Acton has a very 70s perm. I wrote down that he's second place in the William Cat lookalike contest.
This guy's fascinating. The Hugh Major Gortner, that's his name, was at the age of four a minister, a priest, an evangelist priest, because he had a great speaking voice and used to preach on the circuit. And in this film, he was supposed to play a reptilian alien. And when he showed up, he refused to put on the makeup, which is, I believe, more refusal to cover up that perm.
It is a wonderful perm.
So then the question is, it would have become V.
Yeah.
More like Alien Mine. I have a feeling that's what he looked like.
I
love that movie.
Oh, that's a good movie. This is
this is Star Crash.
Which I'm happy they actually explained Star Crash to some small degree, because I was really
a very
wondering.
Small degree.
It was later released as The Adventures of Stella Star, wasn't it?
Well, that was the working.
Was that a working title? That was
the working title, yeah. Mm. Yeah, The Adventures of Stella Star. The adventure is she stands during the climax by the
her role in saving the universe is moral support at the end.
Yeah, the Adventures of Stella Star ended.
The robot chauvinism and her just going, yeah, that's fine. I just can't get over that. Because that robot character. Or C-3PO with a Texas accent.
so classic.
What was it about movies of this era going, well, it's a space Western, so we actually need cowboys in it. let's just call him not Darth Vader, the good Darth Vader. I don't know. He's obviously what they were going to put on the posters to sell this in Star Wars.
Villain, you mean?
No. The cowboy robot.
Well, the thing is, he looks more like a Cylon. It's a hilarious thing. But the personality wise, he's C-3PO with a different accent.
and a different attitude, because to a certain degree, he's actually got a lot of different attitudes. Because at the beginning, he's so nervous. Evil.
Oh, I thought it meant at the very beginning when he's capturing them.
No, yeah, no. After that, like once they're buddies, then he's nervous about everything. So then he's C-3PO, but then afterwards he becomes quite a bit more heroic in his demeanor.
I think he was just afraid of water.
No, and it's a running gag for a little bit where it's just like, I'll bet you're nervous about this,
yeah.
Aren't you?
Yeah,
and then really late in the film, they bring it up one more time. Like, hey, don't think we forgot about this that we forgot about. Oh, man. This thing's incredible.
You know, it's great because when you have, like, Joe Spinell is one of those guys who's going to show up, I think, a lot in our seasons as we go along. Yes. Because he did a great job. See, the thing is, I found it very interesting because Joe Spinell decided to go the route of chewing up scenery. He just went for the role with that, I'm an evil bastard and I'm going to show you that. Whereas Christopher Plummer went from a serious acting.
Well, I'm personally convinced that Christopher Plummer thought he had beaten out Marlon Brando for the role of Jor-El and showed up on set. And they told him, this is a different movie. You're under contract. You can't leave now. Like, I'm convinced that's how it went.
He heard how much that Alec Guinness got paid for Star Wars, and he's like, I got to get on some of this.
He wanted to pay $10,000 a day, but he wasn't there long.
No, I was pretty sure they could have done him in just one day. That was probably an afternoon's work. Days.
Oh yeah, just sitting down.
literally one of the most decorated actors in history. Though one of only 24 people to win the triple crown of acting, an Academy Award, an Oscar, and a Tony Award. In this.
Well, I
nice.
I do not know what he was doing, but he was Shakespearing it up is what he was doing.
His speech at the end is like if you have insomnia, He just starts talking, and I can't. I could not. I'm like, that's how you want to go out? That's how you want to go out?
He has that incredibly weird speech right at the very end about darkness has left and
it will return. I know exactly what that speech is. That's the speech that they give at the end of every role playing game that you've ever played in your life.
That's like the text at the end of an arcade game when you finished it.
Yeah. I'm convinced he thought he was Jor-El. I'm not standing by that. Until he got on set.
Yeah.
Now I was a little confused by something he did early in the film.
Ooh, confusion.
Fair enough.
Yeah. When he calls upon the two sword fighting robots.
Yeah.
I mean, they're cool. They were stop motion. I'm into them. And then he says, I'm going to give you a mission that you cannot fail. Don't see these robots for another 40 minutes.
That's the count. That's the bad guy, though, that does that.
Bad guy
has the robots.
I was wondering, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some strange stop motion effects in this that I think I was pretty impressed with that part. They're kind of like leftover footage from a George Powell movie or something.
Luigi Cozzi, who I believe what was he, Lewis Carroll or something like that, in the credits for the American release. But Luigi Cozzi, who wrote and directed this, he was a huge fan of Harryhausen and wanted this to be Sinbad in space.
Nice.
So that's what he was going for. Those effects, Harryhausen wouldn't have allowed those on the screen. When he was 3 years old, he would have said those, he could do better quality. It's stop motion with, I believe it's just a stick with tinfoil on it. And you know, I'm talking about the big one on the beach.
Yes.
And,
oh my God. So
tell me about the nipples on that robot. Why?
So the thrust of the plot for most of this is that Stella Star and the robot, I can't remember the robot's name.
What? It's like R or something. It's not R, but it's
L.
It's L.
L.
L. L. There you go.
L, yeah. Yeah, so that Stella Star and L are searching the universe because the ship that the prince was on fired off three escape shuttles that went to different planets. They're going from shuttle to shuttle trying to find the prince. And someone on the ship also. They also are supposed to know where the bad guy's hiding. So that's the two things they want to get. They want to get the prince, and they want to get the secret plans to the Death Star. Sorry, I mean they want to get the location of the enemy ship that looks like a claw.
The enemy's hidden base.
The hidden fortress, as it were. So they end up onto a water world. They end up on the beach. That's where the Amazons live. There's Amazonians in this movie. Kudos for that, for putting in a whole mess of women for 15 minutes that are in bikinis. and then the Amazonians send their giant robot, which is also like a Harryhausen style stop motion creature, after Stella Star and Elle. And what is the most distinguishing feature of this giant robot, Jack?
Those nipples.
It has nipples. It has visible. It has giant metal screw type nut like nipples.
Nipples. Huge nipples.
I was so hoping that those were blasters. I wanted those to be blasters.
I'm like, that's the only way it makes sense is if those were machine guns. But no, they're just nipples.
So what you got? They're being attacked by a topless robot, is essentially.
Yeah.
On an Amazonian planet, no less.
It's like an 80 foot tall.
That's
topless the robot.
Make that a pitch. Make that the pitch for this movie, Star Crash. It's about this woman who's attacked by a 100 foot topless robot.
Oh, hey, and they got movie to do it, so they must have. Because Kazi said that the script and the set designs and everything was designed before Star Wars came out. So anything that's similar is a coincidence. Like the lightsaber.
Like the lightsaber.
Total coincidence. Has to be a coincidence. I can't believe it would be anything else.
They're both being inspired by a third source. That is, that's how you pretend these things happen.
Bullshit on
us. Zeitgeist.
Dude. Oh, this movie's unbelievable. I love that they get there and they find the Prince Hasselhoff. And there's so much to be said about when they find him. But we'll get there. But I just love that Akron then her they're sitting there going, well, now we found you and we gotta find the hidden base. And Akron's like, well, think about it. We were attacked by this evil thing and this evil thing, and we were told the hidden base would be a planet where it's protected by two different evil things. So think about it. We must be on it. And they're all like, oh, you're right. And Hasselhoff goes, why didn't I figure that out? And he goes, well, you couldn't know. And I'm like,
well, of course he couldn't know because only Archon can see the future.
He has all the same information to figure it out that Akron or Archon or whatever the hell his name is.
Actually, no, he didn't have all the same information because wasn't it the Amazons who told them that
they were just attacked by two different things? That was his logic. Was, hey, we were attacked by two different evil things, and we were told two different evil things protected it.
But who told them the two evil things protected it is what I'm asking. I thought it was the Amazons.
Yeah, it was the Amazons.
David Hasselhoff was not there for the Amazons, so.
Okay, I guess you're right. There's not a plot hole.
Wait.
Oh, no, there's a plot hole. There's plenty.
Well, what that means is that they were trying to chase down David Hasselhoff because he had the secret information, and he never actually had the secret information.
Yeah.
They just had to sort that out themselves once they found David. How did David Hasselhoff get first credit? Is that like something that happened later?
I think it must have been.
Because it's 52 minutes into this movie before we get the Hoff. So it must be something that they like.
Get that Hoff, and the first time we see him, it's a close-up because they're like, this is a pretty man. We're going to spend as much time on close-ups on him as we can.
With the eyeliner on. That was so good.
How much had Hoff done by this point?
I wouldn't think it can be much. He looks really young.
Oh, yeah.
No, he has two TV credits and a movie credit, which probably will end up on the show at some point called Revenge of the Cheerleaders, where he plays a character.
I've seen that movie hundreds of times, and I'm not even exaggerating.
He plays a character named Boner. This is only his second screen role.
It's really, honestly, just him naked in a shower scene. It's basically all.
And you've seen that hundreds of times.
Because there's like 20 naked chicks in there with him.
A movie called Boner. Hey, it's called Boner. That's awesome. That in itself.
So we've been talking about Hasselhoff's appearance in this, but I was a little bit more confused. What was the troglodyte's motivation? Because I thought they were going to eat her or rape her, and we never got to find out.
Oh, you mean
sorry that one of those two things didn't happen?
I swear to God, when we first saw them, I never thought troglodytes. I thought, why the hell does this planet have lepers?
Well, because those rubber the rubber appliances that they threw on, and I mean threw on people, they did not bother trying to match them to skin tone or anything like that. It was like glue, smack, good enough.
I think it was only really confusing because we do see a shot of Hasselhoff's energy mask, which is also awful, before we see the troglodytes proper.
Yes. That energy mask is a wonderful piece of paper mache.
Because when we first saw it, I thought he was one of the bad guys.
I feel like that this is all lifted from like the Iliad or something, because they meet the Amazons and then they get stranded on a snow planet and then they fight the cavemen It feels like Jason and the Argonauts or something.
Well, it definitely has a lot of Greek mythology.
It does follow that structure. I think it might have been translated through several sources, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like it's adapted from the Coles notes of Jason and the Argonauts or something.
Yeah, that makes sense. Or somebody who walked by the Coles notes.
Yeah, they just read the Coles notes in the store.
In the airport while they were on their way to fly the shooting of the movie.
Yeah, they didn't have enough money on them to buy it, so they just had to read it while they were standing there.
I think they must have spent most of their money on John Barry, because, I mean, he did the score for this, you know, another Academy Award winner. There's two Academy Award winners on this. One of the greatest composers of all time, you know, Out of Africa, all the Bond films, and
oh, wow.
and Dances with Wolves. And by the way, though, the film producers tried to get him to score this without showing him the film, because they were worried if they showed it to him, he would back out.
Good
instincts.
It actually felt, as a score, it felt like it was a score that he maybe had lying around on his floor. Like, and it was just like, hey, oh, so this is what the movie's like. Oh, hold on, I've got exactly the thing for you. Picks it up off the toilet, you know, like, but beside the toilet. Here you go. Here.
Yeah, it's like every Fox movie for 10 years sounded like Planet of the Apes. Like, they just reuse the same, just slightly modify the score for like 20 different movies. Just dramatic music.
Yeah. I think we better get to scoring, or we will be here. Right. Still like,
well, this will run longer than the film. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, welcome to season 5. We are continuing our search for the ultimate B movie. And we rate each film in 5 categories, none of which is objective quality. We always start with a category called schlock appeal, and we always start with Stan.
Oh, man. So schlocky. I mean, it's so beautiful because it's got so much Star Wars in it, and I appreciate that. But more so than anything, I really appreciated Carolyn Monroe as Stella Starr. I thought she was excellent. The fact that it has lots of great actors in it and are willing to go out there and perform to the top of their abilities, it seems, it just makes it all that much schlockier. I'm going to give this one a strong 7.
I'm going with an 8. It's Star Wars with more bikinis. 8.
I'm also going to go 7 because, like, the schlock is there, definitely, and it is what makes it enjoyable. But it does. There is a middle section where even the schlock isn't helping, where I got really bored. So thank God for the beginning. Thank God for the end. 7.
It's Star Wars with bikinis plus cavemen. 9. All right. Our next category we call more heart than budget.
Well. So this one's interesting because it's got that whole, so they call them spaghetti Western. So I guess we'll call this one a spaghetti space opera, but so I know that they could shoot it cheaper where they shot it. The fact that they managed to bring in Christopher Plummer, not David Hasselhoff, obviously, but Christopher Plummer, I mean, Carolyn Monroe, like she actually almost had a career for a little bit.
She was a Bond girl. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like reading up about her, I mean, she was going to be Vampirella, but then they wanted her to be nude.
Was she really?
Yeah. Like that's a damn shame. Like her as Vampirella would have been awesome. But, you know, overall, like I got to say they really used their budget well. I'm going to give this one, I'm going to give it an 8. They wanted to make this movie.
Yeah, I honestly, I mean, somebody did indeed see Star Wars and go, we can do that. And they tried hard.
But they were serious. Like, they were, Christopher Plummer, man, he was fucking serious.
These are some committed folks. Yeah, I have to, I'll go as high as a 7 on that.
They had a $4 million production budget. And when you think about all the special effects, it's loaded with special effects shots. Yeah, some of those things are like the troglodytes, and they're just terrible. And some of those special effects are actually pretty good. Like when they're like when they're sitting in the spaceship and they're jumping into hyperspace, and it's actually kind of surprisingly good. And to put that many in, I commend them for it. I give them a 9. They had a lot of heart. They really tried.
I think that's one of the things that my wife said while we were watching it was everyone is just so incredibly serious. Lacey Underall.
Oh, Lacey Underall. Wow.
Yeah. She didn't take my last name. Everyone's just so serious. Everyone wanted this to be Star Wars. Everyone wanted this to be Star Trek or Star Wars, or I mean, they were ready for the like a 3-picture deal on this. So I'm also giving this a 9. I think they really went for it with a lot of especially the stop motion stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
It's not their fault that American International saw the film and said, "We're not releasing this," and they had to drop it around.
That's a missed opportunity right there.
Yeah.
Star Wars got turned down by every studio.
Mm-hmm. Before it was
before it was made.
Yes. Yeah, there's a little bit of a difference between here's the thing. If I looked at this story and the story for Star Wars, I'm probably not saying that there's a lot of huge differences. Before, like, I could look at this and be like, wow, look at that. You know, you've got Amazons, you've got troglodytes, you've got a bad guy, you've got floating cities. You know, it's great. You got lots of stuff. Star Wars, you got stuff. But at the end, there's a little bit of a difference between the two.
All right. The next category, and I hope you've cleared your calendar, is called What the Fuck Moments.
there is a lot. There is a lot. We touched on it earlier. The moment where they were on the planet, the ice planet, and the robot managed to stabilize her vitals so that she could go into suspended animation, and just
by holding her hand.
By holding her hand, and they just kind of did a whole bunch of shots of her getting snow piled on top.
Now, that's much more tasteful than I thought it was going to be. I thought that robot was going to climb on top of her.
I was waiting for the robot to snuggle up with her, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I thought that's where they were going.
I really thought we were going to get a robot humping scene there, and it didn't happen. It was just hand-holding.
Hashtag Stella 2.
And I brought up earlier the floating city, like the city that they are going to use to destroy the this is the whole reason for the Star Crash being involved. Oh, it's like, we need to do Star Crash. What? You mean we have to? Yes, we have to send the floating city and basically send it right into the bad guys. That'll surprise him.
Yeah, their cunning plan was ram them.
Yes, ram him with the floating city that he'll never see coming for whatever reason. I didn't care about that.
Did anyone else, when they mentioned the Star Crash, went, oh, that's an actual thing?
Oh, yeah, totally. Because that was that moment where it was just like, it does have a use.
When they say something about the Star Crash was something about if we could enter the fourth dimension, and I'm still going, what? What fourth dimension?
Yeah, so there's that, and then I love it as they're piloting this floating city, which they have managed to evacuate in record time, I might add. But they're piloting the floating city, and they're doing these like Star Trek 1 close-up shots over top of it, and I'm like, wow, is that like a rainbow-colored random model of like an oil refinery? It didn't look like a city would look.
That was so weird. Yeah,
I don't think I'd want to live in that city because it looked very strange.
That's what happens when all the outer space special effects are made of from Legos.
I think no, Lego would have looked better. No, those looked fine. They looked Duplo, to me, man.
Whatever.
They looked to me more like models. Like
I don't know. I thought that the battle star or the Death Star that they attacked at the end, when they were doing close ups of it, of this thing that has, it's just a coincidence that it has anything similar to Star Wars, that they're attacking this Death Star and they're doing the same shots as they go over. It was so obviously Lego.
Those shots that they're doing, that where it's just like the blast going down, and I'm like, wow, yeah, that's totally pulled directly from Star Wars.
Coincidence.
And then finally, for me, it was Acton and that whole and his light show. But when he told them that he could, what you mean you could see the future? It's like, yep, but I didn't want to tell you because it's part of the rules. It's the law that I can't tell you that I know, because then you'll try to change the future. But I can tell you now that you're going to do something.
But the great part is he had just changed the future.
Yes.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Like he makes this big point about how you can't change the future because you're not supposed to. And then he says you can't change the future because it's impossible to change the future. And then he actually changes the future like two or three times.
Two or three times in the movie. Yes, he just keeps doing it. It's just, and then finally when he dies, it's destiny. And he has to. But we could fix it.
Yeah.
No. Destiny.
Nope, destiny. That's the way that goes.
Jim, I just want to say this because you always take this category last, and I know it's always difficult because often you're sitting there going, man, they're going to use all of them up. Isn't it nice to have a movie where you don't have that worry? There's no way we can get them all.
So anyways, I'm going to give it a lovely 9 for those things.
I can't believe you didn't mention the space torpedoes.
Oh, the space torpedoes.
I love those torpedoes.
Those were so good. Yeah. Well, I had to leave something, right?
I mean, we got a huge space battle going on, and they start launching torpedoes, which I actually was excited when I saw the torpedoes launching from the good ship going over to the bad ship. And I'm like, okay, we're going to get an explosion. No, these torpedoes seem to need a window to enter.
they land. Smash in a window.
And then just two guys jump out of the torpedo and start, so they can have a man battle, like a man-to-man battle. This has to be the least efficient space war thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, they're actually.
I mean, you could have had a bomb in there and killed more people.
Yeah, they're a boarding craft. They're not actually a torpedo. Like it's it's a strange offensive weapon, to be honest. To be serious, to be sure.
Yeah, two guys just jumping out of that. I couldn't tell. During the battle at the beginning, I couldn't tell if they were good guy torpedoes or bad guy torpedoes until the guys jumped out and then started blasting bad guys. And I'm like, oh, good guy torpedoes. Okay, excellent.
the other big WTF for me is, why didn't the bad guys find the space sword when they captured our good guys?
Wait, he must have had it hidden somewhere.
Like, did they somewhere. Not?
Where would he hide a long space sword? A long, thin space sword.
It wasn't, but it
oh,
was
I
a
don't want to
sword.
Think about so... it. He's an alien. Maybe he has more orifices than we know.
But it was just sort of weird that he didn't draw the space sword earlier or anything like that.
You had to wait for
he had to wait for the big bad to leave the room, and then, oh, there's robots going to kill us. Let's use the space sword now.
Okay.
So I'll give it, this 9, definitely. A lot of WTF in this movie.
Okay. We will be here forever if I do this. So I'm going to ask one of you to explain. We explained how Stella escaped, and then she was told that she didn't have to escape.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Let's talk about Akron's escape or not escape.
Well,
the
Thor character shows up. The Thor character shows up and says, okay, and now we gotta get your friend. So then cut to them apparently being at the prison, and Archon, you know, is brought up out of the floor and like, hey, told you it was all gonna work out. And then they're good to go. It's just, I figured that Thor set it up by saying, okay, we've got to go get your friend, something like that. He didn't say that, but and then the next thing you know, they're there, and I assume it's at the prison. You have to assume a lot, I believe. But yeah, like, so if you assume that they're at the prison and that's like the warden there, that's like, oh, hold on, and then brings him up out of the floor, and Bob's your uncle, off you go. Save the universe now, please. Thank you so much. You were a model prisoner for 12 hours.
Yeah, I love Akira just says, like, I told you so.
Yeah, that's the part. That's, I'm like, why?
Told you'd be fine.
He did, in fairness.
He did. He said it would be fine. Well, and again, you know, knows the future.
Oh, he knows the future. I forgot. But we didn't know that at the time. Oh man, that WTF moment for me. But there's so many, like we say. I love the fact that three different times, including twice with one character, we have a good guy apparently shot or killed, only to come back alive later in the movie. Three times in one film. And Akron, when he comes back alive after apparently being killed by Thor, yes, that's right, the guy Robert Tessier played Thor, and you'd all know Robert Tessier if you saw him, I'm sure. Thor kills him by I think it's like a karate chop to the neck. He thinks he's dead.
Well, and you see him with his eyes open looking really dead.
Then he gets back and he's just like, hey, I'm not dead. And Thor's like, holy shit, you're not dead. And then they have a fight that, and you guys get this, you won't believe this, but apparently was improvised on the spot. It's an unbelievable fight, martial arts karate fight. There's a billion. The first time we see Hasselhoff's character, he's wearing this space mask thing. That protects him and creates like this outer shield, and that's because David Hasselhoff was sick, so they had to get somebody else pretend to be him for some of the shots.
That's awesome.
Because he got food poisoning, so somebody else had to pretend to be him. But I love that it shoots these lasers, but they're pink lasers for no reason, like really bright pink lasers. And then he doesn't use it anymore. I'm like, this is a powerful weapon. Why have you stopped using this thing? There's a trillion for this thing. I was going to go 8, but I think I got to go up to 9. I think this deserves the 9.
Oh, by the way, did you see that quote that's listed on Wikipedia from Christopher Plummer about doing this movie?
Yes, I did. Oh, let me read it.
That is the greatest thing ever.
Give us the psychotherapy.
Okay. Plummer said upon the film of the filming, give me Rome any day. I'll do porno in Rome as long as I can get to Rome. Getting to Rome was the greatest thing that happened in that for me. I think it was only about 3 days in Rome on that one. It was all shot at once. Discussing his role as the Emperor, he said, how can you play the Emperor of the Universe? What a wonderful part to play. It puts God in a very dicey moment, doesn't it? He's very insecure, God, when the Emperor's around.
I love it.
That's the single best thing about this movie now.
I love it. Absolutely love it.
I don't need any more. I just want that.
Yeah, I was going to put that right at the end, but when you brought it up, I'm like, no, I can read that.
God, that's too good. It's too good.
All right. Well, where do I go from here? Okay, so we talked about robot nipples. We talked about the torpedoes.
Is robot nipples do you think this is only going to be the first time that we're going to talk about robot nipples overall?
Long season ahead of us.
Yeah. We should have made it a modifier, honestly. Okay, what I'm going to go with then is Well, we talked about that they have to smash the city, the floating city.
Andor?
the floating space city, yeah. into the bad guy's ship. The bad guy's ship is literally, it's a flat piece with clawed fingers. But when it goes into attack mode, the fingers close.
Yes.
When it's relaxed, the fingers are open and it just looks like a hand. Then it becomes a fist when it's in attack mode.
A fist. Say that with quotation marks.
Yeah. Definitely check the show notes so you can take a look at what this thing looks like. It's amazing. It's so on the nose. So that all happens. The emperor and his son are reunited. Stella's there, hanging around, pointing at stuff, and they're on the bad guy's planet. The bad guy's planet has been is about to explode. And then the emperor, I've got these out of order. Yeah, so he finds them. It's before they blow up the other ship. He finds it, the emperor finds them. They're all reunited, and they're like, "Well, this planet's about to explode. We're in trouble." And the emperor's like, "Oh, it's okay. I've got this green ray that can stop time for 3 minutes." And I'm waiting for the 3 minutes to matter in any way. No, it doesn't. If they had said we've got 3 minutes before this planet's going to blow up, it would have done exactly the same thing in the plot.
Yeah, because they were just like, 3 minutes. We can get this done in 3 minutes, no problem.
It's like, it's going to blow up in about 30 seconds. Oh, it's okay. I can buy us another 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, so really, we're all good.
We'll grab an elevator. We're out of here.
Yeah, this is not like Mission Impossible where it's happening on the 1 second mark. No. This is like, yeah, you got about 3 minutes, so take your time, you know? Have a snack.
And I mentioned the 100-foot robot has nipples. all right, 9 for me as well. 9's across the board there. Our next category we call memorable moments.
Oh, memorable moments. Honestly, this movie, like, well, her outfit that she has on at the beginning, that's a memorable moment for me because I'm going to
wardrobe. She does have the incredible wardrobe in this film.
There's a great point where she's got like a clear plastic garbage bag on, and and the thing
which,
that,
by the way, she had diarrhea the day of filming that, so she was pretty happy that she was wearing something like that.
Oh man, but the thing,
you have great trivia this season.
I know.
The thing I love about that is that there's, you can tell that they have turned off the audio, because anytime they turn on the audio, she's making that like squinch 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 noise of walking with in plastic, but most of the time it's. There's some really long lenses, so you know that the lines are just dubbed over top because they're so far away. They could be quoting Shakespeare, and it would not matter at all. So yeah, there's some great moments. I think I'll probably. I mean, of course, those space swords are fantastic. You know, I will. I think I'll remember more of the movie as opposed to a lot of moments. So overall, I'm going to give it. I'll give it a 7.
Yeah, this movie I enjoy greatly. I like so much stuff going on, but memorable, I don't think it's that memorable. I mean, I like the girl in the bikini. The space chairs are kind of cool. There's not a lot of sticking to the old brainaroo on that one. I'm only going to give it a 4.
Yeah, I think it's more. I was going to go 5. I think I'm going to go up to 6 because I actually remember some of these special effects pretty good. Like, I think some of the effects that were actually surprisingly well done, I remember, and just the overall, it's a memorable movie, but it's a memorable for the WTS instead of for things that are on purpose as a general rule. But yeah, I mean, it does stick as far as like it's unique. It's got a unique quality to it and some special effects that I appreciate, and I appreciate the effort. I think six is a fair call on this one.
Yeah, it's always a challenge when you have a lot of WTF that it's those two things rarely balance. But I think, I mean, as weird as the robot with nipples is, it's probably one of the most memorable sections. There's a neat effect where she slams a sword into the ground to keep L away from, like, to separate the two heroes. And then there's a shot of L pushing the sword down. Like, they've built a scale one for like a full size one for him to actually push down to match the stop motion. So that's kind of a cool idea. I'm also going to go with a six on this one. Our final category is called crazy concept.
Well, I mean, Star Wars probably appeared pretty crazy in when they were shopping around. I think that the idea of something out in space, I guess in the 70s, probably this kind of big concept, and it was a big concept, like there's no question, like the idea of multiple planets, multiple bad guys, that kind of thing, there was a lot going on here, and I have to give them props for that amount. So really, I'm gonna go with a six on this.
You know, I'm going to go a little bit lower. I'm only going to give it a four just on the basis of it was second to, there's a lot of these Star Wars clones coming out about this time. They knew they had their money as soon as they had the genre picked out. So I don't think it was that crazy. The hilarious ensues on how not great they did at it, but as concept, not that crazy. Or
yeah, I mean, this was in a lot of ways it was, you know, this was a Battle of the Planets was this was an experiment to see if that was conceivable, you know, for Corman. So it's not crazy. It's just a sci-fi thing, you know, stealing from a bunch of other things. But when you throw it all together, it's got some crazy elements, but not as many as I would have. Like if they had thrown in something like for that space sword, maybe the ninja could have been passed through to one of the characters. Then you would have upped the crazy and the spirit of a ninja. So they lack something like that, just of like really insane. So so I'm only going to go five.
Yeah, I'm in the same spot that it's. There's a lot of pieces there, but it's borrowing heavily from not only Star Wars, but Jason and the Argonauts, Flash Gordon. I mean, the bad guy looks, he's just being the merciless.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
totally.
Totally.
So very much, yeah, it's lifting from a lot of places that that we've seen before. So I'm also going a five. Every season, we have six secret modifiers. This film has two of them. It gets a minus one for what we're calling Star Warts. It definitely is a Star Wars ripoff, despite their protestations. it does get a plus one for what we're calling Williamstown. It has an original score that is quite good. One of the other modifiers, this one's going to be one we may debate over the course of the season, is if it has enough space talk. I did not think that this movie had enough space talk.
There wasn't no the what is it called again, the fracking, you know, words, yeah. Like that are yeah, totally made up to replace English words. When you're saying something like we're blast them to astro dust, yeah. Well, that's not really, you know, yeah, but if they come up with something yeah. original for that, then that's different, right?
Yeah, they called the floating city a floating city.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there was nothing in here that screamed like, oh yeah, that's totally created for this movie.
No,
yeah.
Felder Carb or anything like that, right?
Yeah, right. you didn't do the Kessel run in 9 parsecs or 12 parsecs or whatever.
I mean, they didn't even give Atom some weird religion. I mean,
and he was an evangelist preacher at four.
Less than 12 parsecs.
There you go. Thank you.
You have to be specific on that. Otherwise, you're going to piss people off.
All right, which brings us to a total score of 71.5 out of 100, which puts it just outside of the top 10 of the films we've seen so far. Wow. Pretty good showing.
That's a good start to the season.
It is. Well, this is, space is such a great place for us to be hanging out for a little while.
No, I do think that there will be a true contender at some point in time will emerge during this season. I have no doubt about it.
Well, I look forward to talking about that contender because I know that I have enjoyed Star Crash a lot, and I know that as we move into our next movie, it is the Reb Brown classic Space Mutiny. So I am a big fan of Reb Brown, always happy to talk about his pictures. So Jim, why don't you tell the folks where they can find us on the internet?
Absolutely. We are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo and use that hashtag when you're talking about the B movies that you love. And everywhere else, check in with our sponsors, We Talk Podcasts. They have a website called wetalkpodcast.com that is the home of the Octagon, the ongoing record of the score that each film has gotten in each of the five categories, as well as its overall score. So you can keep track of as we search for the ultimate B movie. And I'm hoping something's really going to push up this season and get into that top three. It's been a while since we've had something break that top three, top five. So, also they're on Twitter and on Facebook, We Talk Podcasts.
All right. Well, as I say, next episode, we got Space Mutiny as we carry on with season five, Astronuts of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. So unless anybody has anything else to add to this wonderful, wonderful episode, thank you for joining us. I am 8th Dan Stanadu. For Jim and for Jack and for Nick, thank you for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Split into two warring factions, our own and the one ruled by the evil Count Zarthan from the League of the Dark Worlds.
The Count has created a weapon so vast, so huge, that it would take a whole planet to conceal it. You must sail to the haunted stars, find the Count's secret planet and destroy it.